नारद उवाच इत्थं
पुरञ्जनं साध्व्यक्
वशमानीय विभ्रमैः पुरञ्जनी महाराज रेमे रमयति पतिम्। नारद उवाच इत्थं पुरञ्जनं साध्व्यक् वशमानीय विभ्रमैः पुरञ्जनी महाराज रेमे रमयति पतिम्। नारद उवाच इत्थं पुरञ्जनं साध्व्यक् वशमानीय विभ्रमैः पुरञ्जनी महाराज रेमे रमयति पतिम्। Narada vacha,
Narada
said,
itam
das
puranjanam,
king puranjanam,
sadvyak,
completely,
vashamaniya,
bringing under her control,
vibramaihi,
by her charms,
puranjani,
the wife of King Puranjana.
Maharaja,
O King.
Reme,
enjoyed.
Ramayati,
giving all satisfaction.
Patim,
to her husband. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. The great sage Narada continued, "My dear king, after bewildering her husband in different ways and bringing him under her control, the wife of King Puranjana gave him all satisfaction and enjoyed sex life with him." Purport. After hunting in the forest, King Puranjana returned home, and after refreshing himself by taking a bath and eating nice food, he searched for his wife. When he saw her lying down on the ground without a bed, as if neglected and devoid of any proper dress, he became very much aggrieved. He then became attracted to her and began to enjoy her company. A living entity is severely engaged in the material world in sinful activities. These sinful activities may be compared to King Puranjana's hunting in the forest. A sinful life can be counteracted by various processes of religion, such as yajna, vrata, and dana. That is, the performance of sacrifices, the taking of a vow for some religious ritual, and giving charity. In this way, one may become free from the reactions of sinful life and at the same time awaken his original Krishna consciousness. By coming home, taking his bath, eating nice foodstuff, getting refreshed and searching out his wife, King Puranjana came to his good consciousness in his family life. In other words, a systematic family life as enjoyed in the Vedas is better than an irresponsible sinful life. If a husband and wife combine together in Krishna consciousness and live together peacefully, that is very nice. However, if a husband becomes too much attracted by his wife and forgets his duty in life, the implication of materialistic life will again resume. Srila Rupa Goswami has therefore recommended Anya Saktasya Vishayan, Bhaktira Samrita Sindhu 1-2-255. Without being attracted by sex, the husband and wife may live together for the advancement of spiritual life. The husband should engage in devotional service, and the wife should be faithful and religious according to the Vedic injunctions. Such a combination is very good. However, if the husband becomes too much attracted to the wife due to sex, the position becomes very dangerous. Women, in general, are very much sexually inclined. Indeed, it is said that a woman's sex desire is 9 times stronger than a man's. It is therefore a man's duty to keep a woman under his control by satisfying her, giving her ornaments, nice food and clothes, and engaging her in religious activities. Of course, a woman should have a few children and in this way not be disturbing to the man. Unfortunately, if the man becomes attracted to the woman simply for sex enjoyment, then family life becomes abominable. The great politician Chanakya Pandit has said, "Bharya Rupavati Shatruhu," a beautiful wife is an enemy. Of course, every woman in the eyes of her husband is very beautiful. Others may see her as not very beautiful, but the husband, being very much attracted to her, sees her always as very beautiful. If the husband sees the wife as very beautiful, it is also to be assumed that he is too much attracted to her. This attraction is the attraction of sex. The whole world is captivated by the two modes of material nature, Rajaguna and Tamaguna, passion and ignorance. Generally, women are very much passionate and are less intelligent. Therefore, somehow or other, a man should not be under the control of their passion and ignorance. By performing bhakti yoga or devotional service, a man can be raised to a platform of goodness. If a husband situated in a mode of goodness can control his wife, who is in passion and ignorance, the woman is benefited. Forgetting her natural inclination for passion and ignorance, the woman becomes obedient and faithful to her husband, who is situated in goodness. Such a life becomes very welcome. The intelligence of the man and woman may then work very nicely together, and they can make a progressive march towards spiritual realization. Otherwise, the husband, coming under the control of the wife, sacrifices his quality of goodness and becomes subservient to the qualities of passion and ignorance. In this way, the whole situation becomes polluted. The conclusion is that a household life is better than a sinful life devoid of irresponsibility. But if in the household life the husband becomes subordinate to the wife, involvement in materialistic life again becomes prominent. In this way, a man's material bondage becomes enhanced. Because of this, according to the Vedic system, after a certain age, a man is recommended to abandon his family life and for the stage of vanaprastha and sannyas. So, well, first, I hope that nobody is taking it personally. And no, there are purports of Srila Prabhupada, and no, there is no need anybody to get edgy or upset about it. If understanding actually what it means, then it's for benefit of all of us. I'm just saying it because I know some devotees who use this purport, and there are a few other similar which they actually say that Srila Prabhupada was wrong, that what he write is not effect. So I would like to stress that what he writes, it's that's what it is, and as I said, we will try to explain it so that nobody feels offended. Who may feel offended, why somebody may feel offended is because of dualities. Thinking, well, I am woman, I am man, right? I am more intelligent, I am less intelligent, no, I am this, I am that, dualities. And the dualities come from the ahankar. So, and the ahankar is all about why we connect, that we think that we are this body. And we do hear many times from Srila Prabhupada that we should know we are not this body. But as soon as we think that we are this body, so then all these dualities will be affecting us. And as Bhagavatam now points out in the 11th canto, this pointed that anger arises from dualities. So we have to get above that dualities. We have to get above that thinking I am this body, and whatever belongs to this body, it's mine, it's about me, and now therefore the concept of aham mameti, now it's very prominent. But we should understand that we are just the living entities, now conditioned, covered, and the body was given to us to use it. And we have the free will to use the body either to go back to Godhead or to use it to enjoy it. But if we use the body and the senses to enjoy it, then very unlikely we will go back to Godhead in this lifetime. So, therefore, we may be not happy that Srila Prabhupada may be writing something like that. But if we understand what actually is being spoken, what is it about, that the purpose of saying it is so then we get elevated about the bodily platform, and as Srila Prabhupada points out, we get involved in bhakti yoga. That's all about it. So now if somebody can remain a brahmachari and as a brahmachari practice the duty of a brahmachari and not being attracted by lusty desires, then he may remain brahmachari, and by that he may go back to Godhead. If somebody cannot control himself, there are more needs, especially emotional. So then such a person then may enter into Grihastha ashram. But Grihastha ashram is not a license for sex. Srila Prabhupada mentions what Grihastha ashram. Grihastha ashram is that the man may have sex once a month until the wife becomes pregnant, and then he has to wait for the baby, and then he can have again sex after it once a month. Anything else is illicit. And it's not Grihastha. So for Grihastha life can be Krishna conscious. Grihastha, by following the duties of a Grihastha, can go back to Godhead easily. But those who don't follow the duties of Grihastha become Grihamedi, and for them it's not guaranteed that they will go back to Godhead. So what do we want? Where do we want to go? Why are we here? We all say we want to go back to Godhead. Do we all mean it really? Do we all do everything for that? Do we do maximum for going back to Godhead? Or we are happy maintaining our attachments, so then we get everything best of both. We are recognized as a devotees, and that's enough for us, but at the same time we can enjoy whenever we want. Srila Prabhupada said that devotional service actually is a voluntary suffering. That means that we choose the voluntary path of sacrifice, tapa, austerity, sacrifice. That way then we can progress. So what is our tapasya? Following four regulative principles. And then we get into chanting of the holy name. So Srila Prabhupada, first he said we should all chant minimum 64 rounds. Then seeing that it's not possible, then he went down to 32, then 16. So 16 is something like, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada says, who doesn't chant 64, he's patita. But okay, Srila Prabhupada says 16. 16 is, you cannot go below that. So we should really focus on that minimum 16 rounds a day must be there. But when you have opportunity, chant more. We should develop the desire to chant minimum 64. That's the standard. But 16 is the minimum. Whatever one can do. Then this is our tapasya. Get up in the morning and chant. If you have no time during the day. Anyway, during the morning is the best time. Before Mangala Arati you can chant 16 rounds. Go to sleep earlier. You can do that. Everybody can do that. And that's the best time to chant. So how much do we do for that? How much do we sacrifice for devotional service? How much do we sacrifice for Krishna? How much do we sacrifice for Srila Prabhupada? And then how do we know what should we do? Right? Everybody has different problems. So then how do we solve the problems? With somebody who has the same problem, we will not solve the problem. You have to find a way, somebody who knows solution for your problem. And don't think that your problem is unique. Don't think that only you have the problem. Everybody has the same problems. We are trying to go back to Godhead, but we are attached to the material world. So we are trying to get rid of the attachment. And how do we get rid of the attachment? Srila Prabhupada points out, by culture. The culture we get by education. So education and culture. That's the system. Because when we have to first educate ourselves. But education doesn't mean to study books or just read the books and not do anything about it. Real purpose of education is realization. That means we read the book, we actually study the book, and then we apply what we had studied in our life. Not thinking, oh, this is 5,000 years old, that doesn't apply now, it's too old, or it's just some story. And in fact, yes, King Puranjana is just a story, but applies to anybody. It's about the living entity. It applied 5,000 years ago, applied millions of years ago, applies now, and it will apply again millions of years after. Apply in this yuga, it applies in another yuga. This is what it is. We are like this. We have to accept it. So, how do we get rid of the lustful desires? Because those are the ones which are the most strongly holding us in this material world. Guru Sadhu Shastra. So Guru gave us the Mahamantra. Chant. Avoid offenses. At least Namabhas. Try to avoid offenses. Then come to the stage of Shudanam. Do avoid offenses. Without offenses, you chant. And then you will be able to realize Krishna. Then Shastra. Guru give us instruction. Saru give us instruction. Read Shastra. So through the eyes of Guru, we can understand Shastra. And Srila Prabhupada had mentioned Bhagavad Gita Bhagavatam, that's enough. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada mentioned, if all the books of the whole world will be destroyed, but Srimad Bhagavatam will remain, nothing got lost. It's a strong statement, but it's true. Nothing got lost. So then, why are we not be attracted to read Bhagavatam all the time? We should. But some say that actually Srila Prabhupada gave us only like basic instructions. Just something so then, for the Kanishkas, for the beginning. And therefore, some of us then, we go and look for somebody else who are giving us some more rahasya, something more. Is that so? It's fortunately not. Because Srila Prabhupada, he is such an expert that he wrote his commentaries such a way so they can address somebody on who is on Kanishka level, somebody on Madhyama, or somebody on Uttama. And each and every person sees in those purports what they need to see for their advancement to the next level. So if somebody is on the Kanishka level, of course he will see just the basic instructions. And if he is not studying Srimad Bhagavatam, he will stay on that platform thinking that somebody else should be pushing in his head all these high-end instructions. That's not true. These come by realization. So we have to work for it. Voluntary suffering. We have to sacrifice our time, our energy, chant and study. Study and apply. That should be our lifestyle. Apply what you study in Bhagavatam among each of us, all of us. Why did Rupa Goswami write Nectar of Instruction, Uparishamrita? It's for the devotees. For the devotees, how they can go back to Godhead. You follow these instructions and you will be able to go back to Godhead. How to control senses. how to accept everything favorable for devotional service, how to reject everything which is not favorable, and how to develop relationships among devotees. So then we can transfer these relationships between us and the Lord. It's simple. So simple. But we are not taking it. We have our own agendas. Oh, he is like that to me. I'm not going to relate to him. He is nonsense. But what about us? Are we perfect? So, daráte praty grihnáty? Guhyem akhiti pričaty bhum te bojajate? These six principles, they are very easy and they immensely enhance the relationship. To the extent that Srila Prabhupada actually wants, we should not practice them with non-devotees. We should practice them among devotees. Because these relationships are actually, you know, going to make change in our life. They're going to show us how we can relate to each other and how we can relate to Krishna. They will give us the base of the culture. Like Dharati Pratiginati, culture of giving gifts, right? One give gifts and one accept gifts. It's excellent tool how to make one happy. You give gift and the person is happy, you also are happy, even more than the person who gets the gift. Guhyam akhiti pričaty. No, opening heart and being able to listen to somebody who needs to open his heart. It's very important. Bhunkte bojayate. Giving, no, distributing prasad. Inviting, no, somebody for prasad. And accepting prasad. So we have to learn this culture. How to distribute prasad and how to accept prasad. It's given in Chaitanya Charitamrita. We sit in line, right? And then prasad is being distributed. And then that way, then the culture can go on. If that changes, no, then the culture is being destroyed. It's very important that we get this into our heads. It's very important. Why is Chaitanya Charitamrita talking so much about Bhunkte Bojayate? For nothing? So, these are things which we have to note. We cannot whimsically change something for something else without thinking about consequences. It's extremely important that we follow the culture. We have our culture. It's given by the Shastra, by Guru, by Sadhu. That needs to be followed. And we need to educate ourselves. Apply the education and then properly live our lives as devotees. Develop that understanding. You develop understanding that you are not this body. Then who you are? Living entity. And what is our constitutional position? Servant of the Lord. Then very easily we can go back to Godhead. Otherwise, no guarantee. By the way, Ajamil, right? He chanted the name of Narayan, his son, and he went back to Godhead. But Srila Prabhupada points out also that he was able to chant purely the Lord's name because in the beginning of his life he practiced Brahmanic culture. He was very pure Brahmana. So he practiced, he was doing his japa, he was doing his sarana, then he fell down. So at the end of his life, he actually very quickly remembered, and that's why he was able to relate to, and also his son. He called him Narayan, right, because he has some tendency, pious tendency. But he was able to purely chant the Lord's name, and that's why the Yamarutas were not successful. So we should also, if we take the example of Ajamil, that at the end of our life we can just chant and we will go back to Godhead. Okay, but do it as Arangal. In the beginning, do practice your sarana very rigidly. At least in the beginning. At least so then you get properly to know the culture. And you are educated. You know what you are getting into. Then you will be successful. Okay, so now those few points here to explain. Now, Srila Prabhupada points out that the woman's sex desire is 9 times stronger than a man's, right? So, where does it coming from? Who actually, you know, did Prabhupada or did Chanakya Pandit or no? Who, actually, the origin comes from Kardama Muni. Then, in the Bhagavatam, it described how Kardama Muni fully satisfied Devahuti, his wife, by expanding into 9 forms, and he satisfied her that way. Then, and then, what does actually it means? What it means that the woman's sex desire is 9 times stronger. It's that for the woman, it's not just the sex as such. It's everything around it. It's everything around. Now she is much more conscious of the surroundings, the mood, the place, the time, the dress, and everything must be paka. For the man, it doesn't matter really. So, for her to be able to get into the full satisfaction, she must be 9 times more paka. She is 9 times more demanding than the man. That's all what it means. And then what does it mean that the woman is less intelligent than man? Now, what is intelligence? Or what is the function of intelligence? Main function of intelligence is a discrimination. So, to be able to understand this is right, this is wrong. And that can be done by the intelligence, actually by the part of the brain which acts as a rational part. One who thinks rationally, so then very clearly can distinguish between right and wrong. Now, the other part of the brain works as emotional part. Now, if one tries to distinguish what's right and wrong under emotions, can anybody be successful? No. So you can see, like the man, he can be purely rational. And then when he is rational, he can very clearly see what's right, what's wrong. But if the man gets into emotional state, he cannot think rationally at all, and then he always does blunders. He doesn't know what to do. That's the function, that's just the nature of the man's physiology. So the man is able to either think rationally or emotionally. It's not mixed. Now, for the woman, it's when she thinks rationally, there is always emotion mixed. And when she is emotional, there is always some rational thinking mixed. So that means that when she is supposed to make some decisions, she will always be under influence of the emotions, so that there will be other considerations, not just the facts and figures. So that may make it more difficult for her to make to discriminate. Say like, okay, my friend or somebody did this, and this is wrong, and he must be punished. Okay, but he is my friend. So then there must be some different consideration. Man, he can easily do it. If he is rational, he says, well, you did wrong. Okay, you are my friend, but it's still, I have the authority, I have to do it, I have to punish you. But now for the woman it will be more difficult. So therefore the power of discrimination is less. That's all. But on other side, because when she is not emotional and then the rational part also works, she never, most of the time, doesn't get into situations that that she commits something really wrong, not knowing about what actually should have been done right. That's why more of the men are really criminals than women, because the man gets emotional, then he commits some crime very easily under emotion. He doesn't know what is he doing. But for the woman, they know, no, I cannot do this. I can do only this much. So that function is there because the main duty of a woman is to bring up children. Now, try to bring up a children by somebody, like a small kid, by somebody who is only rational. Try to, just, hey, why is he passing stool now? Okay, so he did, so what? That cannot be, now is no time for that. So man cannot do that. The woman, right? Oh, he's passing, so, oh, he needs to be taken care of. But he has clean clothes on, so what? But no, he has to be taken care of. So then, she will take him and nicely dress him, pacify him, and the kid is satisfied. Men cannot do that. That's out of question. So for the man, only when the kid grows up and he is able to follow somewhat, some basics, then the man can take care. But, so somebody has to do it. And that's because the woman, she knows, okay, he's not supposed to do it. But it happened. So then what? So then quickly just pacify him, no problem, we will overcome that, it will happen, it will be okay. So the kid is pacified and everybody is happy. So if we understand that the Krishna created the nature such a way, so then everybody can participate, can follow his duties and can actually advance, then it's very easy. We don't have to take offenses. But we have to educate ourselves. If we don't educate, if we just hear something as a buzzword. Okay, woman is less intelligent. Oh, no. How can you say that? Like that. No. What's the problem? So, we have to educate ourselves again. If we don't know, ask. Consult Bhagavatam. Everything is described in Bhagavatam, everything. If you don't see it, means you are not on that level yet. Study again. Now, Lord Brahma is it. If we want to understand Shastra, we have to study Shastra 3 times. Not read, study Shastra 3 times. Then we can understand what is being spoken. So then, study. You want to know what it means. You want to know the instructions. You want to know how to use these instructions to go back to Godhead. So you have to study. Then you will get the vigyan. Then you will be able to go back to Godhead. It's that clear. It's that easy. And that we have some anarthas, we have some attachment, that's not a problem. Everything can be overcome by knowledge and determination. So that's the solution. So then why not try it, right? Why not go for it? Okay, now some questions. In the back there.
You said now at the end that by knowledge and determination. Can you explain a little bit what is the source of determination?
The determination, see, you have to be determined to get to the source of the knowledge, right? So, as I said, if you study books, so then what do you get? You get some gyan, and you may know how to do things, how to move, you know, somewhat through the material world. But if you study actually by contemplation, so you study contemplate, how does it apply to me? It's not about others, it's about me. That's a knowledge. Then you contemplate how to use that knowledge. Then what happened? Do you come to know how to actually use it? You do. An example, right? You may learn how to cook pasta, right? So you take the pasta and you put it in the boiling water and it cooks. And it's soft, it's good. Now you take it out and then what? Then you offer it plain pasta. Okay. But you realize that you know how to cook pasta. So what do you do with that? From now you will eat pasta plain all the time? You get more determination, more enthusiasm to learn about how to make it more palatable. So let's put some olive oil. And then you do the same thing again. And you realize it's better. Your realization increases. It deepens. But still not as good as it could be. So let's study more about it. Determination, just open it and then open books, ask people, what can you do about it? Oh, put some tomatoes, put some fresh sabji, right? Oregano, and you know, just go for it. Or make some other sauce, and then you figure out, wow, that's very good. Can I improve it? And then you keep improving. Oh, this was not so good, this way, okay, I'll try it differently. And then you keep doing it until you get to the perfection, if you are determined, right? Then perfection means that, no, you offer it and everybody will be, wow, this is so wonderful, how did you do it? Well, I spent a lot of energy and time, no, I sacrificed a lot of it to come to the perfection. So now, by applying, now you contemplate application, you apply the contemplation, you get the realization. By that you figure out, actually, no, that was very good. So you go, because of the determination, you go back, you study more, you contemplate more. What else can you do? And then you apply it again. And that way you come to perfection. And what's perfection? The perfection of every knowledge is that you find a connection between you, the knowledge, and Krishna. Actually, it's about you and Krishna. What is your relationship towards the Lord? He is giving you the knowledge. So even through cooking, you can go back to Godhead. But you have to be determined to go to the depth to find the connection between what you are studying and the Lord. If you stop anywhere before, it won't be perfect, it won't be complete. So you have to be that much determined. Not satisfied until you reach perfection. Then you can fully surrender, you can fully get attached to the Lord. And by attaching yourself to the Lord, then it's easy to give up the attachment to the material world. Understand? Any other question?
You mentioned that the duty of women is to have children. And Prabhupada mentioned that a woman should have few children. So my question is, some people get married and they said, we decide not to have children.
Do?
To decide some not people to have. Get married, they mm-hmm. say, we decide not to have children.
Mm-hmm.
Is it a failure, or why do they get married in the first place?
Well, yeah, why do you get married in the first place? If you want to live the life of brahmacharya, then there is no need for marriage. Srila Prabhupada mentions that if you don't have to get married, better don't. How does the Shastra describe the marriage? As a dark, blind well. You don't know what you are getting into. Now, if you get into the marriage, and no, then sometimes may happen, right? No, the couple cannot have children. So that's one case. That what can you do? But if they decide we don't want to have children because now we want to just not do our things, why did they get married in the first place? That I don't know. They should not have. There is no need for that. Because see what it is, that if actually the woman, as Srila Prabhupada says, no, when she gets children, then she will be not occupied by the children. She can actually not develop the motherhood towards the children, and it will be easier for her to actually fully surrender to her duties and fully surrender to Krishna. If not, maybe if she is very strong and if she is able to focus on her duties and not be disturbed by anything external, and follow the husband and then be able to help the husband, so then together they can work. But it will be very difficult. So therefore it's recommended. If you don't want to have children, don't get married. If you get married, then do have children. It's natural. Yeah. Any questions? Yeah, this one more.
Hare Krishna, thank you for your class. I have a question regarding sacrifice. If you can explain a bit more what it means. Because you use the word in connection, we give up or we sacrifice. We give up, we follow the four regulated principles, and that's the sacrifice. My understanding was that sacrifice is something you do to please Krishna, or something that you offer. So generally it's something nice that you want to offer. So just if you can just explain a bit more what sacrifice means.
See, the problem, it's us. Now, in the beginning, what do we have to offer to Krishna that we can actually please him? Sri Rupa Goswami describes that we cannot progress in devotional service if we don't get attached to the Lord, but at the same time don't get detached from the material world. So we are full of anarthas. So if we try to practice devotional service, and many times we claim that we can actually do spontaneous devotional service at that stage, it's just going to be sahaj. It's not going to help us. And you can see the karmis, they have Bhagavad Sapta, and they talk about 10th canto, they pose themselves as very devotional, knowing Krishna, so then they discover the intimate pastimes, just because the people who are listening, they are also karmis, and they are just into hearing some lusty stories. So that's because we are attached to the material world. We are full of lust. So then in the beginning, if we try to rigidly follow the principles, we very much please the Lord. We very much please our Guru. We very much please Srila Prabhupada. Then, as we are very rigid, this is our sacrifice. That's the sacrifice. We follow it very strictly. No compromise whatsoever. And if something happens, we fall down, immediately we repent. We think, it was foolish of me. Next time I will not do it. Not thinking, so what? Three are also okay. No philosophy about it. That's nonsense. No, there are four ecologic principles and we have to follow four rigidly. Then, by that, we can train the mind. That the mind is not distracted by the senses. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada, now, what is he saying? In the morning, beat the mind with the shoe 100 times. In the evening, with the broom 100 times. Well, you can take it literally. It may not be bad, anyway. But that's what it is. No. Mind has demands, no. Has demands, no. We have to be rigid. Strict. That's the sacrifice. Not that there is, no. Look, there are some nice sweets. No. It's bhoga. It's cooked by some karmis. You don't know what's inside. But they are tasty. You like them. Okay. Where is the sacrifice? Oh, I sacrificed myself. I just ate bhoga. No. So great sacrifice I did. No. I will not eat it. And then we can think about that actually we will come from the platform of Namaparat. Because we are rigid in our vow, in our sacrifice, then we will be able to work on avoiding offenses. I don't want to commit an offense. Sometimes it comes. But no. Today it happened. I will make sure tomorrow it will not. So by following rigidly the principles, we can come from Namaparat to Namabhas. And then the mind gets adjusted. The demands of the senses becomes weaker and weaker and weaker, and they now diminish. And then we can use the senses to please Krishna. Then we can hear the Shudana. We can cook, we can do whatever. We will not be agitated by it's for us. The ahamamati concept will go away. It's a great sacrifice. So it sounds very simple, but it has to be done day by day by day, every time, every moment. Every moment we have the free will to decide, are we going to go towards Krishna or towards Maya? Every moment. And we have to be responsible to make the right decision every moment. Because we are responsible for our own spiritual advancement. Nobody else, no guru, no sadhu, no shastra, nobody else is responsible for that we don't follow what we are supposed to do. They are here to guide us. Krishna, he manifests externally as a spiritual master, internally as a Chaitanya guru from within the heart. So he gives us instruction now through our spiritual master. When we are pure enough to understand what he is telling us from heart, he will instruct us from the heart. But we have to take the decision, that the free will, I want to do that. I want to follow my spiritual master. I want to surrender to my spiritual master. I want to follow his instructions. I want to ask questions. I want to serve him, perform seva. Not that I will use him to get my things done. That's aparad. Very severe aparad. So, and then, like that, we can progress. But it's a sacrifice. We have to do that. We have to surrender. Pranipata. Pariprasna seva. Pranipata is first. And not externally. Oh, Guru Maharaj, no, please, no, what should I do? Tell me. Can I do this? No, you cannot. What do you mean? I want to do this. Now, one devotee comes to his Guru Maharaj. Guru Maharaj, can I get married? And then he said, okay, then, yeah, Oh, so please come. The after tomorrow is the wedding. He knew. No. If he would say no, then what would happen? He would get married anyway, but he would not disobey the order of spiritual master. And therefore, the spiritual master, he knows the mind of the disciple. So he gives him that even being, he knows it may not be good for him. But like that, if we are not surrendered, then we tend to use our spiritual master for our own purposes. And it's bad. That's why we are not advancing. That's why we may be saying, I'm chanting no, my rounds, my japa, no, so long, and I feel nothing. No, the system must not work. That's not true. We should look into, are we not committing some apparat, Vaishnava apparat, Guru apparat? Are we attentive about chanting? We should look into that. Then we may figure out why we are not getting any taste, why we are not actually not improving. But we should not blame Guru or Sadhu or Shastra for our failure. It's our failure and it's our fault. It's our responsibility that we start to follow Guru, Sadhu, Shastra so we can get out. But if we think that we are here on our own, unlikely we will get back to God in this lifetime. It's very unfortunate. Yeah? Okay, so we'll end here. Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Jai Nitai Gaur Pramanande. One second, I just forgot, I would like to read something which everybody should know. Now, Srila Prabhupada, he compiled right the seven purposes of ISKCON, right? So I just would like to read them so then we can now contemplate about how much we as individuals are doing for to fulfill these purposes. So the seven purposes of ISKCON. One, to systematically propagate spiritual knowledge to society at large and to educate all people in the techniques of spiritual life in order to check the imbalance of values in life and to achieve real unity and peace in the world. Two, to propagate a consciousness of Krishna, God, as it is revealed in the great scriptures of India, Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. Three, to bring the members of the society together with each other and nearer to Krishna, the prime entity, thus developing the idea within the members and humanity at large that each soul is part and parcel of the quality of Godhead, Krishna. Four, to teach and encourage the Sankirtan movement, congregational chanting of the holy name of God, as revealed in the techniques, teachings of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Five, to erect for the members and for society at large a holy place of transcendental pastimes dedicated to the personality of Krishna. Six, to bring the members closer together for the purpose of teaching a simpler, more natural way of life. Seven, with a view towards achieving the aforementioned purposes, to publish and distribute periodicals, magazines, books, and other writings. Now, just for you so you can contemplate about. Think about how many of these points are about education and culture. Basically, all are about education. And all its own way mention the development of culture, the importance of the culture. So before, now, you hear something or you think about that something is not important, think twice. And before you make a decision, research, ask Guru, Sadhu, Shastra if what you are just about to do, if it's the right thing to do. It's for your life, it's for your development. And if you are rigid in that, then you go back to Godhead. If others don't, no, what can you do? It's their responsibility. But if you take the responsibility seriously, you can go back to Godhead. And why are we here? That's what we want to do. Hare Krishna.